This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Welcome to Crying Aunt. My name's Julie Che, and I have a quick favour to ask. Well, two really. Firstly, if you could download this episode of Crying Aunt, I would be eternally grateful, as this is what counts towards charts. And also, if you have enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate if you could take the time to rate or review us on iTunes. As a little incentive, I have some snazzy merch to give away to anyone who leaves us a 5-star review. So please leave your Instagram handle or your Twitter handle in the review so I can DM you and I can forward on that snazzy little merch I have going on at the moment. And also a quick shout out to the gorgeous people who have reviewed the podcast so far. Your kind words have been so lovely. And if you could DM me on Instagram at Julie J Comedy, I can send you on some of those merchy bits I mentioned just as a little thank you for reviewing us already. A quick disclaimer as well that absolutely no offence is meant to any of the people discussed in this episode, and we always strive to discuss these topics in a human and empathetic way. This week I'm talking to...
Hello, Blind America.
Yay! About the death of Marilyn Rinn. Let me tell you about this story. I don't know, have you heard of this one? I think as I go to the details, you might have heard of it.
Okay.
So this is the case of Marilyn Rinn. So Marilyn Rinn, in December 1995, she was 40 years of age. She was unmarried and had no children of her own, was really close to her nieces and nephew, who lived around the corner from her in Blanche, in Blanchardstown in Dublin, with her brother and sister-in-law. Yes, yes, you probably have heard of this.
Okay. Great. Sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm just...
No, please interrupt.
Exclaiming in shock.
This is like, I totally want you to interrupt. So please do. Yes.
Brilliant.
Your input is very, very welcome. So Marilyn was 5'5". She had short brown hair and brown eyes. She loved aerobics and sports, and she was really active in the Girl Guides, of which her nieces were members. She was also, this is very handy, I think, she was great buddies with her sister-in-law, who was married to her brother. So she had a really nice relationship with the family, and she would often babysit the nieces and nephews and all that. So she was very close to them. And on Monday, the 18th of December, 1995, she went around to her brother's house, and they had dinner and a little cake, as Marilyn had just celebrated turning 40. So obviously kind of a big deal, and they had a little celebration for her. The next day, she called around to her sister-in-law again, where she told her that after work on Thursday, the 21st of December, she was planning on attending her Christmas party in Ruhini. At this time, Marilyn was working in the Department of the Environment. So Thursday rolls around, and after work, she went out with her colleagues and had a few drinks in Tower Street before they headed out to Ruhini to the Sheeting Hotel, where they were going to have like a meal and music. So the usual kind of Christmas work party affair.
This is very telling for someone like me that lives in central Dublin, right? Because to me, right, if you say Blanche, I'm like, that's too far away. If you say Swords, I'm like, that's too far away. If you say Tala, like anywhere that's not in town is far away for me. So I can't imagine being in Tara Street, which is city centre, and then going, do you know where we go? Ruhini.
You know, it does seem...
Nowhere near Blanche.
It's not. I mean, it's like, it's north side, but I mean, Blanche is basically kind of, it is Dublin West, really. It's like northwest.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not close at all.
I once accidentally got on a bus to Ruhini because I was going, this is when I was like fucking 19 or something like that, and I was supposed to be going to my boyfriend's house. I accidentally got on the wrong bus. I got on the 29A instead of the 27B or something like that. Word up to Coolock. And I accidentally got to Ruhini and started crying because I didn't know where I was. That's how much of an inner city dub I am, is that if I get to like Dublin, what is it? 9 or 5? No, it's not 9 because...
As you were talking about going to Ruhini on the bus, I had just in my head, and RIP Liam O'Reilly of Bagatelle, who passed away this week, but in my head, aww, I was just hearing a remix of their famous Summer in Dublin song. So I jumped on a bus to Ruhini.
This is just, you're schooling me on all these songs, Irish lilts.
I'm making you a playlist and I'm sending it to you. And tell me, where exactly are you from in Dublin again?
Blimey. I'm from Fairview in Dublin 3.
That's pretty central. That is very central.
Literally, like, you get on a bus, you're 10 minutes in good traffic, you know, that kind of thing. Like, it's very, very close. We could walk to town from my childhood home in like 45 minutes.
That is insane. You know? That is so, yeah. I mean, no wonder.
You'd be on O'Connell Street in half an hour for sure.
Oh, that is so central. I didn't know you were such a little town rat. I love it. Cause, I mean, I know exactly what you mean about your having your drinks in town. It does seem counterintuitive to leave town to go to your work party.
To go to Raheny.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is when Raheny switches off. We're not saying anything derogatory about Raheny, but I would be slow to leave town to go anywhere really if I'm having a few
babies. If you told me maybe like you were going to Fairview, then fine, because that's still near the town, like, and that's near my house. But like, if you were to say, oh, we're going to go into town and then go pretty much back, and I mean, it's not as far as Blanche, I don't think. This is as well. This tells you how much I know about geography. Like, I couldn't tell you. I wouldn't be able to point at Blanche on a map.
Blanche, I mean, again, this is where Blanche switches off. Blanche, we love you. Stick with it. But no, it is, I mean, I think it's just for me personally, I would have always gone out in town if I was in Dublin. It was very rare for me to go out outside of the city centre.
Exactly. But I guess, and I will.
Go on, love.
I'll add to your disclaimer there, because the thing is, Blanche and Raheny, do please stick with us. I'm not insulting you. I'm insulting myself.
Oh, no, we know that.
I don't know enough about anywhere that's not my place. It's like, it's terrible, really. I'm such,
no, it's, you know, not. When people, stop it.
You know when people from the country, as in Colchis, which
this
we won't
even. This is when the country
even
switches off. We're only going to be left with Fairview.
But you know when people from the country give out about Dubliners, yeah. I'm the person that they're giving out about. I'm the model bitch that they are giving out about. That's, and I look, I agree with you.
You I'm concur. You are that I bitch. Do. And we
I
love wish. That bitch, for sure.
100% that.
No, but it is. I completely agree. It's so funny you say that, because actually when I first encountered the story, that was my initial thought when I heard the Raheny thing as well. I was like, would you leave Tara Street and go to Raheny? But look, it's where Tara the party was. Where the party was. So that's why she went out to Raheny. So they had the meal, they had the bit of music, and after things had finished up, she left, Marilyn left to say, and she was saying that she was going to go and meet former co-workers from the Central Statistics Office, which she had left 2 years earlier. So Marilyn was then seen in O'Connell Street in Eddie Rock by a former colleague who she had previously worked with. So he bumped into her there.
And so she went back from Raheny to O'Connell Street. Sorry, I'm trying to follow this now.
Yeah, okay. There is. You see, this is the thing. And because it was the mid-90s, unfortunately, there wasn't a lot of CCTV available in this story. So the only real CCTV they found was on the buses. Because, of course, this is the mid-90s in Ireland. It's not... Obviously, nowadays you'd have CCTV everywhere, but this was not the case then. So there are gaps in the story. So she was walking with a person she worked with in Raheny towards a taxi rank and was like, oh, you know, I'm actually going to head off and meet some of the lads that she would have worked with a couple of years earlier. And then there is a gap. And she is then seen in Eddie Rockets by a former colleague. But she was on her own. The former colleague themselves didn't give much details as such. They had just kind of bumped into her and it was like a quick hello kind of thing. So she was definitely seen there. But you would ask yourself, was she meeting someone or what was going on that she was in that Eddie Rockets on O'Connell Street? Because if you're going to Blanche, it does seem... It's not en route. So if you're getting a taxi in Raheny, you would think that you would just go straight home to Blanche. But for some reason, she went back into town. So nobody knows why she went back into town.
Okay, wait. I'm sorry, what time was this?
So this would have been, I think it was between 2 and 3 in the morning.
And Eddie Rockets is still open.
Oh, gosh, yeah, those, you know,
those are the days.
Well, you know what I really miss? What
I mean, love a bit of Eddie Rockets.
Love a bit of Eddie big Rockets. Fan. Empty your pockets, Eddie Rockets.
Big fan, big fan.
I love a bit of Eddie Rockets for sure. So the next day, which was the Friday, Marilyn was late for work, which was unusual, but her colleagues kind of thought nothing of it, given that it was the day after the night before. At 11, someone in the office called her house to see if everything was okay, but received no answer. So nobody picked up. But again, they just presumed that she was maybe still in bed or whatever. So for a few days, her absence was not given much thought. Now, I guess coming back to this, like, we have to understand, because you kind of think, oh, but surely, you know, if after a day or two, you know, nobody had heard from her, people would be, you know, getting alarmed or contacting the guards or whatever. But like, this is the busiest weekend in the calendar for everyone. So I suppose it's the thing of that, again, this is a time before mobiles. Somebody could easily presume, okay, well, that person is probably in so-and-so's house. And that's not the case. And people can kind of maybe fall between two stools a little bit. So What happened was that Christmas Eve came around and there was no sign of Marilyn, but they just presumed that she was kind of doing her own thing, because usually she would go to her parents' house for Christmas. And when that didn't happen, they kind of presumed that she had made alternative arrangements. And then Christmas Day, obviously, it came and went. Stephen's Day, her brother was at that point saying to himself, okay, something is amiss here. So he called around to her house, and when he didn't get an answer, went to the guards to report his sister Marilyn missing. Now, at that point, Marilyn had not been seen in 6 days. So the guards obviously wasted no time going door to door, questioning locals and appealing to witnesses to come forward, because at that stage, unfortunately, like, she had been gone for a long time. At that point.
Yeah. These days it's like, what, 48 hours?
Yeah. I mean, like, you see, so that's why when you come back to this, you're kind of thinking, oh, that is a long time before you go to the guards. But then the flip side is, you know, when somebody is single, like, I know when I was single, I was very much doing my own thing. That, like, at the same time, when it's such a busy time period as well for families, you can understand why maybe it took the extra couple of days before the guards were notified on this. So witnesses said that they had seen Marilyn on the Friday. So this is when things get a bit hairy. So they're asking people in Blanche, like, have you seen Marilyn? Like, you know, trying to just pinpoint the last time that she was spotted. And a 13-year-old boy comes forward to say that he had seen Marilyn on the Friday morning, which was the 22nd, and that he had seen her talking to his sister, and that she had also been seen on the bus by another neighbor. So they have two witnesses saying that they had seen Marilyn on the bus going into town that morning. So they think, okay, that is the last sighting of Marilyn. And also a friend of Marilyn says that Marilyn had called her on the morning of Friday the 22nd. Remember, this is like the era of landlines. So that before she went to work, she had called her to say that she was going into town that evening and had arranged to meet her after work. So they're like, okay, we have a couple of people who are saying that they either saw or were talking to Marilyn the day after the work party.
Okay, so the work... Sorry, my attention span has been affected.
Oh no,
by lockdown.
I love you asking questions, and just because oftentimes I probably need a bit of clarity myself, so go for it.
So the work party was on a Thursday night.
Yes.
Okay, Thursday. And then there's witnesses saying that she, and then someone saw her later on the Thursday night, as in early Friday morning. And then there's witnesses saying that they saw them the next morning, as in the morning of Friday.
Yes.
Great, great, great. I'm on board. I gotcha. But the brother hasn't gone to the guards until Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Yes, not until Monday. The guards were working off the assumption that Marilyn had made it home and disappeared on the Friday. But the fact that Marilyn had completely disappeared was definitely a cause of huge worry, as it was really out of character for her. She was a really considerate, punctual person, not like me, who would always check in with family and friends. So a search of her house also suggested that she hadn't planned to go MIA, because there were cards on the kitchen table. She still had presents under the tree. Like, it seemed like this was somebody that was getting ready for Christmas. So nothing was adding up. And then a body was found. So a body was found on the beach in Port Marnock and was sent for a post-mortem. And Marilyn's family obviously feared the worst when they heard this news. But the body was identified as that of Denise Myers. However, nonetheless, Marilyn's family would say that at this point, they presumed that Marilyn was dead because they hadn't heard from her. And at this point, we're talking about over a week. So they were presuming at this stage that she was dead. So on Friday, the 6th of January, guards appealed to the taxi driver who had driven Marilyn from Raheny to town on the Thursday night to come forward. They also appealed to anyone who'd been in Eddie Rockets and anyone who would have taken the night link. So they were working off the theory that Marilyn had... But she had gotten the night link to Blanchardstown because that is what she had told the former colleague that she saw in Eddie Rockets that night, that she was getting the night link home to Blanche. So then they were asking people to come forward because actually, which is quite, it's a bit depressing to think of it, but they had CCTV. The bus, basically Dublin Bus, did keep CCTV of the buses, but they generally only kept it. And do you remember this period when the poor bus drivers, I think they have like a protective glass now, but back in the 90s, they were being attacked on the bus and getting robbed for cash and things like that. So they only really kept the footage just if someone was, if a driver was attacked. And if there was no issue with the driver, they destroyed it after 4 days. So they so they didn't have any footage from the buses, which is really frustrating because, of course, that's what they were trying to ascertain. Did she get them?
Yeah. Especially in these days when, I mean, maybe it's because, as you said, like I listen to a lot of true crime, but there's some stuff that doesn't, you know, that people don't start investigating some stuff until fucking 10 years later.
I know.
So you really hope that these things would be kept. Imagine you were on a bus and something happened to you on a bus and then the CCTV wasn't kept because the
I mean, you'd imagine they've changed that now because at the time they destroyed it after like 4 days, which seems a bit premature. But I think with the advent of digital, surely they probably would hang up. You'd hope so.
That's true. I do have to give them more credit because, like, I mean, there's only so much floor space that we can be taken up with all these videos of drunkards on the, you know, drunk junior cert students.
Well, this is true. You would hope that Dublin Bus wouldn't put an RT on it. Do you remember when RT destroyed their archives just because they needed the floor space? You're like, guys, like, no. Too soon.
Get a rental, get a little storage unit.
Like, surely if you're trying to save space, like, just take a table away from the canteen. Don't destroy all the archives.
True, exactly. Come on, RTE, get it together.
This is when RTE switches off. Okay, so as the investigation continued, the guards, now this is really heartbreaking. The guards soon realized that the witnesses who had seen Marilyn on the Friday, who had claimed to see her, when they asked for description of her clothes, they realized that they were describing clothes that Marilyn had been wearing on the Thursday. So they came to the conclusion that these witnesses had actually been mixed up in their days and not seen Marilyn on the Friday, but had actually seen her getting the bus on Thursday morning. Okay. Because why would she go home and put on the same clothes? Like, you just wouldn't do that.
I mean, yeah, it wouldn't be like me at all. Well, I would never do that.
Well, let's face it. I have two pandemic jumpers, and I have said that I am effectively Sarah Lund now in The Killing because I have two jumpers which I rotate. But like when I was working, I might have three outfits, but you'd rotate them, wouldn't you? You might change it up a bit the following day.
Not after a party. If I've been drinking. Absolutely not. Then my clothes are on the floor from yesterday when I got changed in a hurry to go to the Christmas party. And then I come home, same clothes, straight back on, same knickers and everything. You're coming straight.
But would you not even just change a scarf or something so people would know you've gone home and you've changed the knickers?
No. I'm not expecting that I'm going to be murdered. You know?
Well, I was problem, Pauline. If you go missing and the guards are saying, well, if they say to me, you're mixed up in your days there because she was wearing the same clothes, and I'd have to explain, no, that was Pauline. That's what she did.
Yeah, this is the most compelling argument that I've ever heard for changing up my outfits, to be honest.
For changing the knicks.
Honestly, well, no, look, right, okay, I'll give you that. I do change the knicks every day, no matter what.
Woo!
To to the point, thank you very much, to the point where when I was about like 23, in my very, very single days, I used to carry a spare Nyx with me so that I could have little one night stands left, right, and center.
Listen, used to have a spare Nyx in my handbag. I'd love to say it was because in case I was off scoring, but generally I would end up staying in my GBF's house, Eamon. Shout out to Eamon. And I'd carry the Nyx. Yeah, I carry the Nyx in case I was staying over in Amos, which invariably I was. No. Let's face it.
I always had it. I always had Nyx and mascara. My mother used to refer to it as a slut pack. It was very effective. So the Nyx would always be changed, but you wouldn't see those from the outside. So this is the most compelling argument that I've heard for changing the outside of my clothing so that case I'm murdered and people need to know what day they saw me on.
It's food for thought, but look, you.
I'll give it a go. I'll sleep on it and we'll see.
Well, it's definitely food for thought. But I mean, in this instance, imagine now as a guard, you're thinking, oh, fuck. Like, that's actually completely, I mean, it's kind of like made these witness statements pretty much redundant because they're talking about the Thursday. So as a result, they refocused the investigation because now it looked like she actually had not made it home on that Thursday night at all. So Sunday, January 7th, 7th of January, I hate that Americanism. I often do that. I apologize. So the 7th of January, they decide to search the Toka Valley Park in Blanchardstown. So Tolka, I hope I'm saying that right.
It's Tolka.
Is it Tolka? Sorry, it's the river, Tolka, isn't it? Yeah.
Still a dub, yeah.
Still a dub. You're like, I'm an inner city dub, but I know it's the Tolka.
But it's the fucking Tolka.
The Tolka Valley Park in Blanchardstown. So they start searching and there was a shortcut that went through the park that cut 20 minutes off Marilyn's walk home. And this was a popular route from the village to where the estate where Marilyn lived. So it was also known as an area as well, which saw a lot of antisocial behavior. They brought in dogs to comb the area and quickly discovered a naked body of a woman lying face down in the undergrowth, and her clothes, which matched Marilyn's, were laid in a pile near the area. And close to this area where the body was discovered, a handbag was also found, which contained Marilyn's wallet, ID, and ATM card.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Right. So because poor Marilyn had been lying dead for a week and a half, they actually had to use dental records to identify her, because obviously we're talking about very bad weather. It had been particularly bad that week. And by Monday, the results of the post-mortem were in. And just a bit of a trigger warning for our listener, she had been raped and strangled. That was the cause of death.
Oh,
so it's so terrible. So when returning...
She was lying there for a week and a half before anyone even thought to check the local park.
Now, I know it does sound bad, doesn't it? But then when I kind of read up on it, what I would say is that, so there was kind of like an embankment. So she was found kind of the other side of the embankment. So it wouldn't have necessarily been like, it wasn't like right off the walkway. So you would have probably have had to been looking for something to find the body there.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I know what you mean.
If someone's missing.
Yeah, you would think kind of obvious choice to search the park. And it obviously as well, when you factor in that it was a pathway she would have used a lot. Like there are certainly questions for sure.
Yeah, that's the first place we should be looking, is the route that she would take home. And
it's
not your fault. It's not your fault. It's the Gardaí's fault.
Yeah,
this is where the Gardaí switch off.
Let me tell you, the guard switched off a long time ago. And I'm not just talking about my father, okay? I'm talking about the guards in general. But no, you're right. Look, let's face it, you want to be kind to people here, but it really isn't great. It would be very frustrating as a family member to hear that is where your beloved family member was found. Like, it's not
like even if it takes the brother 6 days, then they should be searching that park on the sixth day. Like, she should be lying out there no longer than it takes to report her missing.
It's after that, everything too long. It's definitely too long. And then there were a couple of other things then that happened. So the body was found, and then they established that, and this is I found this confusing as well, if I'm honest, the friend who Marilyn ran rang, it materialized that she had been mixed up in her days. And again, you do think, wow, like that's kind of probably a pretty big thing to be mixed up on, that you thought that she rang you on the Friday. But again, I suppose busy week, you know, we're talking about landlines. It's hard to maybe pinpoint the days, etc.
You don't have phone records. And I know, you know yourself as a comedian. Yeah, you never know what day
true.
It is.
Yeah, actually, know? Do you know what? Now that you say it, I take it back, because that is very true.
But if she has a 9-to-5, though, then that's when you're supposed to know the days.
Well, yeah, it just struck me as strange that, I don't know. But look, again, it is, of course, all these things are forgettable.
Who knows?
So door-to-door questioning did confirm that some locals had heard screaming the night on that Thursday night, but at the time they had thought nothing of it because it was obviously very late and it was an area which did attract a lot of antisocial behavior. So they kind of took no notice of it. But again, you are thinking, okay, like, would it pique your interest? However, if I'm honest, we've all heard something late at night and not followed it up. So again,
well, look, that's pretty I live in Temple Bar. I hear a lot of screaming. I hear a lot of fights. I hear a lot of shit. Sure, earlier I heard the guards telling some homeless people to fuck off. And they were just sitting there. They were just sitting there. They weren't doing anything. They weren't bothering anyone. But they told them to fuck off. I looked out the window. It got a little bit rowdy. Everybody moved on. But my point is, there's always something outside the window. And for the most part, there's no point in me really even going to look, because it's just gonna pass. However, then, let's say 4 days later, I see in around Temple Bar, someone's gone missing, or there is some kind of, there's something. Then that's when I'm going, oh, yeah, I actually looked out the window or I actually heard a scream or whatever.
It's retrospective, you know? Isn't it?
I stopped some lads robbing a bike last night because I was making my dinner, heard them outside.
You looked absolute out the window, and hero.
But I didn't even do it in a heroic way. I just went, I can see is. And then they just walked on, of course, because they're little, just young.
They didn't even run. They just staggered on.
They were just like, yeah, no. And you see, if they knew where my voice was coming from, they would have looked up. They would have been like, we were just looking at it. Like, they wouldn't have, you know, but they were kicking it, trying to break the lock. But my point is that, to me, I'm not going to call the guards on them trying to rob a bike and me seeing it, like, because they're in Temple Bar and, like, what the guards aren't going to do. Look, I won't even get into the guards. However, if I was to hear then, oh, six lads of this age were involved in something else later on the same night, then that's when I start to go, oh, I saw those lads.
It's like hindsight is 20/20. So it's retrospective and you're putting it all together.
Exactly. So, like, once they hear that someone's after going missing around that area, they should be thinking, oh, I actually heard some screams that night.
I mean, the cogs should be moving, surely.
This is it.
Yeah,
this
you would think. It. I mean, and again, forgivable, but, you know, that's what we would be thinking looking at this now. So
Everybody has their own lives.
Yeah, this is true. So the guards had told the Pope, the public that the attacker would have had muddy clothes and had scratches from Marilyn fighting him off. So they were trying to obviously locate this person, this assailant. And the investigation was huge, with 70 guards determined to track down Marilyn's killer. So they were working off the theory that she had perhaps gone into Eddie Rockets to meet somebody. But again, nobody could remember Marilyn saying that she was meeting anyone specific. So they were unsure why she went into the Eddie Rockets. And they did search the Tolka River for clues, but nothing materialized. They also found the taxi driver who had driven Marilyn into town that night. But frustratingly, he could offer nothing in the way of detail. Now, they did have a couple of suspects. So there was a woman who came forward and said she had been followed home. She had been, first of all, which is like your worst fear in a nightlink, that she had woke up to a guy basically like groping her on the bus. She'd gotten off the bus in Blanche and this guy had followed her. But thankfully, she then spotted this guy, really clever girl. She spotted this guy, just a stranger, walking on the other side of the road. And she had gotten him to pretend she was her boyfriend and the guy fecked off. But that guy came forward and they ruled him out of their inquiries.
That's such risky business as well, though, because like, oh, that's interesting that he came forward. But that's so risky because, you know, if you were really scared, like I know as a woman, I'm such a combative bitch, but like, so I'd probably get myself into this trouble in the first place for starting fights. But like, but if I was feeling threatened, it's such a risk to go up to another man who you don't know.
Yeah.
And put your kind of like safety, you're scared of this man, so you're going to hedge your bets now.
I know.
On this other guy that could easily either join up with your man, or he could easily like be like, oh, fuck off. Or he could easily, you know, do worse to you because you kind of trusted him for a second. He might go like, oh yeah, well she's, and look, I'm not trying to demonize all men, but this is, these are the things that we have to face. So that's actually really great.
And ultimately that's kind of, you know, that's, I think, clever. Every night of your life when you're in that situation and walking home, you're weighing up, okay, if something happened now, what could I do? You're kind of, you're scoping the place. I mean, this is like a female experience. Like ultimately, you're kind of constantly in survival mode. And it's funny 100%. You say that because I did think that as well. I was like, it's like so smart to go about it that way, but also it is probably taking a bit of a risk. So you're just in that moment, I suppose, weighing up the risks.
Exactly, exactly. And there are stories of people implying.
Horror stories.
Yeah, there's stories of men driving up to women and being like, oh, there's a guy following you. Do you want to get in here? And then in that situation, you don't know which man to trust.
I know. It's just, you know what I mean? It's so like, awful. And crazy. I also thought it was interesting that your man came forward.
Yeah. Okay. So he came forward saying, and they dismissed him. I'm the pervert from the bus.
Yeah. And you know what?
I didn't kill anyone.
I was thinking about that. And again, just assuming, you know, within the context of 90s misogyny, I'm sure he came along and said, listen, just, you know, because they released a photo fit of this guy. So I guess he kind of had to come forward. And he probably said, oh, listen, I don't know what your one's on about. Like, I got off the bus. And, yeah. So let's face it, that was probably the conversation in Blanchardstown Garda Station. Like, that's probably what happened. And then there was another suspect. So this guy who was an acquaintance of Marilyn. So we don't know how he was acquainted with her, but he was admitted to a psychiatric hospital for psychiatric care in the early half of 1996. Mm-hmm. And then it was following his, how he wasn't charged, but he was declared a person of interest in relation to sexual assault. And then later that year, he did actually commit suicide, this man.
Oh, right.
So he was kind of ruled as a person of interest. Now, I use that term, and it's an Americanism as well, because it's not like a legal term as such here, but the guards were interested in speaking to him as well, and he was seen as a potential suspect, but again, was ruled out. So they ruled him out as well. And then there was also this guy, and this potential suspect had been released a couple of months earlier, was living in the Blanchardstown area, and had served a prison term. Now, I can't believe, so this is like 1995, and he committed this crime in 1983, so he got out after 12 years. And his crime had been, he had actually sexually assaulted and murdered a 17-year-old girl in 1983, and he had just been released 2 months earlier. So three men were formally questioned on the 28th of January, but including this potential suspect who had just been released. But ultimately, all these three guys were released without charge.
Right. Now, they had alibis or whatever.
Yeah. So the guards were like, look, unfortunately, we're pretty sure it was none of these three. So three men, so that obviously, you know, they were ruled out. Now, semen had been found on Marilyn's body. So they collected a series of DNA samples from possible perpetrators. And they kind of just, I guess, hit a bit of a wall. Like, I mean, ultimately, they checked the database. And at this time, there was no, like, centralized DNA database. So, like, you could only keep the DNA for 6 months. I know.
But, I mean,
infuriating.
Like, this is like the whole argument as well, that there really shouldn't be a statute of limitations on things like murder or rape or whatever.
No, because, of course, I mean, not. Absolutely not.
It doesn't matter that you got away with it. Like, that's a prize for getting away with it for a certain amount of time.
It's really... Now, thankfully, okay, that has since changed. But when it comes to the you know, keeping the DNA, but like it just meant that the guards hit a wall and they had no match for the DNA, and ultimately, they took a step away from it. They came back in March, so a couple of months later. They came back and kind of went back to the start, going back to witnesses, looking over the questionnaires that they had handed out to see were there any inconsistencies. And then at the end of that month, they had a list of 70 people that they just wanted to talk to, basically was how they referred to it. Now, while talking to people, they did happen upon an inconsistency in one man's statement. So they had handed out these questionnaires and there was one statement which they came back to and thought, oh, okay, like there's something not quite adding up there in terms of the story. So this guy called David Lawler was a married father of one and he had another child on the way. He was living in the area but originally hailed from Baltinglass in Wicklow. He had admitted to walking home that night, but when he said he had gotten home, he said he'd gotten home at about 5. A neighbour had actually told the guards that they had seen him returning home about 4:15. So that was the inconsistency. They were like, okay, that's okay. Something that doesn't add up. It seems small, but they were like, look, it's worth going back talking to him. And he'd also said that he had actually seen a jogger as he had cut through the park that night. So he had gone on this route, he'd walked through the park, and he had said that he had spotted this guy jogging in the park. So they were like, we need to talk to this guy because this is the first mention of a jogger. So on Tuesday, the 6th of August, so a few months later, David Lawler's DNA had been matched to the DNA found on Marilyn's body.
The bastard.
Yeah. So they had brought him in for questioning and at some point asked him to supply his DNA. Now, again, you're wondering, you know, that did take a bit of time, but I suppose to be fair to them, they were reviewing the questionnaires, etc., and looking for inconsistencies. So the DNA was a match.
DNA is very, like, the technical advancements that they made in DNA in like the 80s and 90s is mad. Like,
yes,
so
that's very true.
They're still getting used to it. They're still trying to figure out what to test for and how to test for. Plus, it's Ireland. We're far behind, like, the States or whatever.
And you're spot on, Blaheen, because I actually forgot to say this. And in their defence, they had to send the DNA to the UK because we didn't even have a lab here that would test it.
Because this was the first murder ever in Ireland.
I mean, like, it's just so frustrating. But, so this guy, David Lawler, now he was kind of, I suppose, he was known as a bit of a strange fish. So he had a long ponytail, which meant that he got this nickname in the area called Jesus, but he was just known as a bit of an oddball. And he did have a serious, serious drinking problem. He also worked for Telecom Éireann. Do you remember that? Those good old days.
I do indeed.
And he had racked up a huge bill watching porn on premium websites. So all in all, this guy was just ick.
Okay, well, we're okay with porn now, in fairness. And we're okay with paying for your porn.
I just think, definitely pay for your porn.
Back then, though. These days is different to back then.
But I'm just saying in terms of, like, if you're watching the porn in work on the on the work computer,
I did not realize that it was at work. That's my bad. Okay.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, no, but actually, you're right, because the way I'm looking at my syntax here, and it's really bad. Yes, yeah, so he racked these bills up in work. Now, I'm not quite sure. Like, he worked for Telecom Éireann. Like, surely if anyone is going to cop to these, like websites, you would think Telecom Éireann. He had basically been looking up all that stuff in work.
Okay, well then that's completely ick. I 100% agree.
A little bit ick because you know, obviously, like, no shame in the porn, but
have a little bit of an odd wank in the loos or whatever, but like, don't be watching porn at your desk on the work desktop.
Please.
In Telecom Éireann, a family company.
A family company, RIP, Telecom Éireann. Yeah. So he had also been at his work party on Thursday, the 21st of December. In his case, he'd been at the Central Hotel, Love the Central, that night. And he'd walked to O'Connell Street where he'd gotten food. And when he couldn't get a taxi, because remember, these are the days when nobody could get a taxi in Dublin.
There was no Halo or Freenow, none of that stuff.
He had decided, which this seems extreme, but I suppose if you can't get a taxi, to walk home to Blanche, which is quite a walk.
Yeah.
He, he told guards that he had noticed Marilyn, who'd been walking home alone, and that he had followed her. Now, what really, like, I think is so upsetting about this is just the fact that it was so random, because the guards had initially been working off the theory, like, did somebody follow Marilyn? But he was like, it was just basically, I saw her and I followed her, which I just think is so terrifying.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So sad. And he said that he had grabbed her and pulled her into the bushes. And then after the assault, and again, I just think this is particularly heartbreaking for the family, he had said that Marilyn had told him she recognized him from the area. And that's when he strangled her.
Oh, God. Okay. So, yeah. So she was kind of like being almost like, oh, you'll pay for this, or yeah, like, you know, I'm going to get you or whatever.
Yeah. Like Marilyn, aww, from like the, you know, the bit that I did read about her, like she did come across as a very strong character, you know, and yeah, she said this to him, and he told the guards, that's why I killed her. So,
oh, essentially, that's horrific. Then
he, yeah,
that's,
I awesome, mean, just horrific. So when
it's almost like you can't like wish that she didn't say that, obviously, you know.
I know,
like, so I just, horrible.
It's that's just awesome. It's particularly tragic. And he, yeah, was, he said to the guards, that is why I killed her, when she said that she recognized me from the area, because as well, he did have a distinctive look with this ponytail. So when he got home, he took his clothes off and put a wash on and cleaned his shoes. His wife woke up and she heard the washing machine going, obviously thinking, this is really weird, because he didn't really do much around the house and it's the middle of the night. But you're not going to think my husband has killed someone, to be fair. Yeah. Like, you're not going to think that. So the next day he called in sick to work. And again, his colleagues took no notice of that because he'd been drinking heavily the night before. And bizarrely, after being charged with the murder and rape of Marilyn, he was let out on bail, lived in Wicklow, and between the jigs and the reels, I won't get into the detail because it's a bit procedural, but basically it took 2 years from, say, the death of poor Marilyn before this case made it to court. So on the 26th of January 1998, Lawler finally appears in court and pleads guilty. And after, so obviously this has been like over 2 years later, the judge handed down a life sentence. And in 2018, he had served 20, so he'd actually served 20 years, a little longer than the average life sentence, when he was transferred from Arbor Hill Prison. And generally it's believed, so I was trying to find, as far as I know, he hasn't been released as such yet, but he's probably out on day release. You know, the way they have this transitional period before the lifers, before they're like let out fully, but realistically he is probably out on day release at this stage because it's been 22 years. And in 2001, Lawler was in the news again when a former schoolmate of his was charged with a horrific sexual assault. It happened reported that the two were friendly when they had spent, obviously they were in Arbor Hill at the same time. So it happened reported that they were kind of matey, so much so that the guards actually pressed Lawler on whether or not that prison friend had confessed to him his responsibility for other crimes. That schoolmate, Blaheen, was Larry Murphy.
No. Oh, God. Larry Murphy was like a baddie, a bad one.
Doesn't that just give you the chills?
That's horrific, yeah.
So Jesus, they Christ, were from the same town. They were in the same class, Blaheen. And they were both guilty of these horrific sexual attacks. And I mean, in Larry's instance, we're talking, obviously, yeah, for our international listener, and I have actually a Crimeland written up on the Vanishing Triangle, so I'm going to talk about this a bit more. But Larry Murphy, because there's just so much to the whole Larry Murphy situation, but basically, he was thankfully found guilty of a horrendously, I mean, obviously all sexual attacks are horrific, but a particularly horrendous and horrific attack. And he went to prison for a long time, but it is widely believed that he is guilty of other crimes. And the fact that he would have been in the same class as this guy, and they would have committed sexual assaults, obviously unbeknownst to the other one, in different areas of Dublin. It's really, really creepy. I mean, when I read that initially, I mean, it just, the hairs on the back of my neck just stood up. It really gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah. But this is the weird thing then, though, now with your man, David Lawler, right? Is that, so what we're supposed to believe is that it's just some random night. He's walking home. He sees this woman. He goes, oh, yeah. And as we all know, rape is not about sex or being attracted to someone or flirtation. It's about power. And like, especially when it's this kind of thing, which, I mean, we've had to, I won't go too far into it because we've only got a certain amount of time, but like, we have to realize these days that a lot of sexual assault happens. People, you know, in a situation where you thought that it was consensual sex and then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, changes. But this is literally the picture that we tell people not to be like looking for, is, you know, the guy that comes out of the shadows and drags you down a lane.
Yes.
And rapes you. Because that's so unrealistic and so rare. You know, it does happen,
that's
of course.
That's a great point. Yeah.
But it does, but it's so rare that like you'd almost be like, okay, grand, I now that I know not to fear that monster as much, and to be, and the reason we're told not to fear that monster is we're told the monster is really where you eat your bread and butter, like,
yes,
you know. But first, it hurts to just be walking. But I won't be led to believe that this is the first and only time that he's just decided on a walk home, yeah, I'm gonna have a bit of that woman.
I thought the same, that like, as in, it's so extreme. I find it quite hard to believe that he just snapped and suddenly had this urge and followed through on it.
Got,
it's
like,
so extreme.
One child and another on the way and a wife at home, and he's just walking through a park and he decides, I'm gonna
I think there's definitely more to it. And I do think, now again, just for our international listener, because we have discussed this before in Crimeland, so life in Ireland is generally it's only like 18 years. It's not life as it is in other countries. But the fact
and it's
that
actually so rare to get a conviction for a rapist,
it's so
even.
Well, I mean, so rare to get a conviction, and B, so rare to get a conviction, and B, generally when people get life, they're usually released before 18 years as well. I mean, 18 is kind of like the average. So the fact that he has spent a bit longer, I mean, it would suggest that, I mean, I don't necessarily think that the court were buying in either, that this was just a normal guy who suddenly snapped, because who does that? I mean, it's sorry, but no. It's probably more than likely that he is out on day release, has not been fully released as of yet. But it is just, it's kind of an extra twist in the tale when you hear that little nugget, and you just wonder, how on earth did that happen? That these two monsters were in like fourth class together. What is that about?
But I know, but I'm sorry to say, like, look, I won't be blind Burka uber feminist, as you know, I won't be so
strong. No, we love blind Burka uber feminist. That's
I won't
what
be
this
so
podcast
staunch.
Is.
But like, honestly, you know, there is a reason that every single woman that you know has an experience that she can talk about as to her own sexual assault. And not every man that you know has a story of them or a friend sexually assault. As you know, it's not as if like, oh, there's just one guy out there doing all the raping.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And every single woman that you know has some kind of story, like, to classify on a scale of mild to strong, but like of a
100%
of a mild or strong sexual assault. You know what I mean? Every woman has a story, and so therefore it follows that every man must have some, not every man, but most men must have some degree of something which either makes them do something bad and not think about it again, or let it slide when they hear that a friend has done something or something like that. So realistically, it's actually quite statistically, sorry to bring it down now, it's probably quite statistically, like,
possible.
Probable.
I mean,
rapists know each other.
I suppose when you frame it like that, statistically speaking, it's maybe not that crazy,
but
that you'd have two people.
I'm talking more technical, I guess, though.
So. Yeah. I mean, I do think it's a little bit creepy, but now that you frame it like that, maybe it's not that crazy.
Well, maybe I'm being a little bit too technical about it, because I'm talking like, even, you know, stories of like, a terrible, not that I'm not saying that it's not sexual assault, but there's sexual assault and then as in on a night out where you where something goes wrong, and that's still sexual assault, but then there's sexual assault and then being murdered and left in a park for a week and a half. Do you know what I mean? So maybe, yeah, the fact there's that like, Larry Murphy's involvement in anything is creepy, Julie, to be honest.
I mean, honestly, just there's so, that's like, as in, because so many people message me and they're like, when are you going to talk about Larry Murphy? But the really frustrating thing about the Larry Murphy situation, and I do, obviously, when we talk about the vanishing triangle, it's just the not knowing.
Yeah, yeah.
With Larry Murphy. I think that's what's really scary, is that there's just still so much unknown, and there's so many really weird coincidences, etc., with Larry Murphy. And then ultimately, like within this jurisdiction, it is, which is completely right, by the way, that like, okay, it is a case of obviously innocent until proven guilty, like, it has to be proven beyond reasonable doubt. We can't be relying on this circumstantial evidence, etc. But just when you look at other situations, there's just so much that comes back to him. As you say, he pops up in any story and it's creepy, but he just seems to pop up in a lot of places. So once I happened upon his name in this, I was like, oh, he has that effect that even his name, the hairs on your neck stand up. There's so few people that have that effect.
Yeah, he's a ubiquitous character in Dublin and Ireland crime, for sure.
You could have a whole, you could probably have a whole true crime series just on Larry Murphy. Let's face it.
You could, 100%. Netflix, are you listening?
Netflix, babe. Listen, TJ Carr, Netflix, Blaheen, it's all wrapped up now.
100%, 100%, that's it.
Blaheen, you're so fab. Just to remind everyone you are on the socials at Being Blah.
I am indeed. Yeah, Instagram and Twitter. I deleted Facebook, so don't bother. Don't be arsed trying to get me there.
Blaheen, I'm never on. Can I delete Facebook? Boring. Is that okay?
Delete it. Just delete it. I haven't deleted my Facebook. It's still there. I've just deleted the app. I was going in there to get that dopamine release, and I'm already doing that too much with the rest of them.
To be honest, nobody's really using Facebook other than your aunties. Let's face it.
Exactly. I mean,
It's just the anti-book. You're on the socials, and then you have your podcast with the lovely Aoife Connor called.
Yeah. It'll be back. It's called I Don't Know Her, and it will be back. We're taking a little hiatus.
That's
at the moment.
Okay. There's a back catalogue.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a catalogue there for people to go through. Blaheen, it's been an absolute pleasure, as always. So lovely to see your lovely face.
You too. It's been great. I actually this is but now I'm kind of freaked out because, you know, usually when I'm listening to true crime, it's American. This is a bit close to home now, Julie.
I know.
And
you
also
know
very
what?
Current.
It is. The reason why I thought this would be good is just the week that was. I was like, kind of, you know, even the dates, etc. But there, exactly. I know what you mean. There is something about when you're listening to a murder taking place in Wisconsin, you're kind of disconnected from it. But then when you hear about the Nightlink and Eddie Rockets, it is definitely closer to home.
Yeah, sure. That hits now. So
be safe out there. Love
you
so much.
I will. You too.
Talk to you soon. Thanks, Blaheen. Bye.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Head Stuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.